Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. I see we have co-host Dave again with us tonight, and we'll be taking your calls, of course, in the second half of the show. The number here, if you'd like to dial in, is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. Hopefully I'm coming through loud and clear. That Blog Talk was acting very, very badly right before the show, and in fact it hung up on me and disconnected everything, so we'll see what happens. But to get things started, like we do every week, we start with the randomly generated political rhetoric from the political rhetoric generator, and this week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, I want an America where Colombians and corrupt labor unions cannot sabotage our right to accrue foreign debt. Yeah, just as silly. All right, let's see here. Also, this week's random correlation. We do this to show that causation and correlation are two separate things. This week's random correlation. The number of people who died by falling out of a wheelchair correlates with the cost for 16 ounces of potato chips, unadjusted for inflation, over the past 6 or 7 years. Obviously, the cost of potato chips had nothing to do with people falling out of wheelchairs and dying, or vice versa. But there's a correlation there. And that's why we like to emphasize, again, that correlation is not causation. I guess things started tonight. I should give you a little background why I had to do a best of show last week and what's going on with me. So as most of you who listen to the show regularly know, I am the chair of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky. And in that, I have duties to the party and things that I must do to promote the party. And one of those things that we do is put candidates on the ballot to run for political office. It's been a, shall we say, an interesting few weeks to do this, but I am happy to announce, and it's been reported in several media outlets now, that we will be filing a candidate for the United States Senate for Kentucky this year. As a Libertarian, David Patterson will be our candidate. We just completed a petition drive. I'm actually waiting on validation of the last few hundred signatures here. But as of this moment, we have well in excess of the minimum required to place our candidate on the ballot safely and safe from challenges by either of the other two candidates in the race. We are submitting a total of 9,100 and change signatures, which brings us well over the 5,000 clean signatures, as we call them. Clean is a validated signature. And I've been working with teams of volunteers for the past few weeks to validate those signatures. It took about a month to collect all those signatures with people who were being paid, actually, to collect signatures full-time, as well as volunteers that were working to collect signatures as well. Essentially, the signature collection portion took approximately, I'd say, we'll say a conservative estimate of 500 man hours to collect the petition signatures. And then it took an additional 800 or so man hours to validate the petitions and prepare them to be submitted. We know exactly where we stand. It was all told at least 1,300 man hours involved in putting this petition together, which is a ridiculous amount of time. It also was somewhere in the neighborhood of about $17,000, $17,500 to pay to all the different things to get him on the ballot. And this process is for anyone who is not a Democrat or Republican. Democrats and Republicans only need two signatures, one, two, to get on the ballot for any race in Kentucky, any partisan race in Kentucky, they need two signatures and that's it. Anyone else, libertarians, greens, independents, whatever you are, if you dare to take on the powers that be as the Democrats and Republican parties, you will have to collect anywhere between 25 and 5,000 signatures, depending on the race. It is no easy feat. This is the second ballot access drive that I have been explicitly and directly involved in hardcore. It's actually my fourth drive that I've been involved in at all regarding the 5,000 signature requirement. 5,000 signatures is extremely difficult. And let me explain why, because most people are like, well, 5,000 signatures doesn't seem like it would be that hard. You're starting as an independent or third party, which are not common here in Kentucky, right? So you've got a little bit of a chicken and egg spin-up in that a lot of people want to play 20 questions asking why and who you are and what's the deal with that. So you have that problem. This problem is, of course, the cost involved. The cost, $17,500 in this case, the cost was, and just in dollars, the cost is that you're losing your first use money just to get onto the ballot. And let me understand. Let me explain why first use money is important. Just like in economic terms, right? The first people that get to use the money get the best economic advantage out of that money. In this scenario, in a political scenario, first use means that I am using my first X number of dollars to lay the groundwork to go raise a lot more money. And because all that money has to be spent wasting time collecting signatures, you end up behind the eight ball, you end up late to the game, you end up spending basically every cent that's available out there for you. This happened to me in 2011 when I ran for state treasurer. Those of you who recall, I ran for state treasurer. I spent $17,500 in my campaign. Now, my ballot access drive only cost about $14,500 for various reasons, but the point is that it was a labor. But I only raised $17,500 for my entire statewide campaign. And after my ballot access drive, I had $3,000 to try to do something with. And that $3,000 was basically spent on some yard signs and bumper stickers. You have to have those core things to have a campaign. And it's frustrating because I know, and not just from the libertarian aspect, independents, other parties, have candidates and have ideas that need to be out in the public discourse. They need to be discussed. I'm pretty sure that most people would agree. In fact, I know they do, but we'll get to that in a moment. I knew that most people would disagree that the Democrats and Republicans are doing just a bang-up job these days. Boy, I just wish we had more Democrats and Republicans because they're doing awesome. Said no one ever. The problem is that because you spend all of your time spinning up your campaign never gets off the ground. Now, certainly, there are other aspects that come into play. You have big moneyed interests, the ones funding other candidates who may or may not have millions and millions of dollars to win a job that pays less than $200,000 a year. Obviously, that's an issue. But taking those pieces out of it, I know of, as I used to joke, 17,500 better ways to spend $17,500 than spending it on a petition drive. I know 800 ways to spend 800 man hours that are more efficient than validating petitions. But this is the runaround nonsense that is put before anyone who dares to be anything but a Democrat or Republican. And that is why it is so rare. It's not that the Democrats and Republicans are the only source of answers. Obviously not. 53%, there was a poll done in April, that 53% of likely voters, that's important, likely voters, people who are very likely to vote, agree that neither the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party actually represent Americans. Now, that's a big deal when you have over half of the electorate, the likely electorate, saying that we don't like either one of these two. It's a big deal. The problem is that those same people, many of those same people, will hold their nose or cower in fear to vote against one of the other two. And that's just an unfortunate fact. Because people have it beat into their heads. Well, that guy can't win, so I'm not going to vote for him. Or, well, you know, I'd sure like to vote for him, but they should run a different race. That's one I love to hear. They should run a different race. Oh, because the other people in this particular race are just awesome, right? Sure. I hear every excuse under the book, obviously, in my role as state chair of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky. I hear all kinds of excuses why people aren't going to vote or why they're going to specifically vote for the guy that they hate or the woman they hate because at least it's not the other person they hate a little bit more. Stupid. It's just stupid. And it's sad because we're voting against our own interests. Every time we hold our nose and vote for the lesser of two evils, you are voting against your own interests in the long term. It's what's got us here today, people. That's how we ended up here. A whole lot of people holding their noses. Political parties control the primary process to manipulate outcomes, that lie, cheat, and steal, do anything they can to ensure that their guy gets through the primary, and then, well, now you're just going to have to deal with that, or, oh, man, you definitely don't want to vote for that other person, because, whoo, you know, we may not be perfect, but, boy, they're just terrible. That's Satan over there. That's how we've ended up where we're at. So until people are willing to vote differently and do something different, nothing's going to change. You're going to keep on getting what you got. You keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you got. And so this past weekend, we had the Nothing Fancy Farm event, which is the parody event to Fancy Farm. And that event was started in 2011, basically in response to Fancy Farm denying regular people and third party and independent candidates the opportunity to speak to the public, that controlled atmosphere. And I gave this same basic message. Until you are willing to have the courage to stand up, to be the one that stands out, that says, I'm just mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Our network operator, Ed Springsteen, likes to play that clip all the time. That until you're to that point, you're just perpetuating the problem. And I get tired of hearing about this most important election in history garbage. My God, if I hear one more person spout that again in yet another election, every 2 to 4 years, it's the most important election in history. Really? What is it that makes it most important over the last time it was most important 4 years ago? After a while, you know, it feels like the story about the boy who cried wolf. It may be actually the most important election, but at this point, I don't care because I'm tired of hearing it. I'm just tired of hearing the boy who cried wolf. Speaking of voting stuff, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the Mississippi primary and how specifically, and this is what I want to talk about it, the open primary system. I will come on the record and state for the record right now, I do not favor open primaries. They just lead to shenanigans. In 2008, the state of Ohio, Rush Limbaugh organized the Operation Chaos, where he encouraged a bunch of Republicans to cross lines to vote for Obama, because Hillary was at that point basically running away with the Democratic nomination. And then fast forward to this year, when the guy who squeaked out the win on the Republican side reached out to Democrats, claimed that the other person that he was running against on the Republican ticket, you know, Democrat-Republican, I get them confused. They look the same to me. Anyway, the point is they tried to, or they did reach out to Democrats and told them, hey, you don't have a race to choose from in yours, right? That's our, you know, there's nobody contesting the primary there. So you guys need to flip over and vote for the incumbent Republican, because this other guy, the challenger, is a racist and all this stuff, and they targeted that message to certain ethnic communities, and it was bad, because first of all, it was a lie, which that seems to be the best playbook of all at this point. We're just past the point of telling the truth, so I'll just tell you, David Patterson is actually the second coming of Jesus Christ, and so if you vote against him, you're voting for the devil. You know, why not? Let's go with the lesser game. Might as well embrace it full bore if everybody's just going to lie anyway. Anyway, seriously, the point is that these open primaries are bad. You end up with shenanigans. They're just asking for them. However, I don't believe in state-funded primaries. I think that individual parties who want to put up their candidate, quote-unquote, their official candidate, need to pay for the selection process, the internal selection process for their candidate. Here in the Libertarian Party, we do that. And certainly the other parties have a heck of a lot more money and could do it themselves as well. Absolutely could do it. They'll tell you state law prevents it. It doesn't. There's already Supreme Court precedent on the books. They want it that way. If they didn't want it that way, they could sue and have it gone tomorrow. They want it that way. They're more than happy to accept taxpayer dollars at a cost of about $7 million a year to run a primary election on the backs of you and me. And I don't even get to vote in those damn things. You don't want an open primary. It's not good. There are other systems. They call it the jungle primary, or they call it top two. Now, I know my friend Mike Lewis out there is a big proponent, and also a few of our other listeners, but I'm telling you from experience of our parties, the third parties out in California and some of the western states where they've adopted that model, it just decimates independent and third-party candidates. Decimates them. In fact, it actually oftentimes leads to just straight-up one-party rule. I could see going to top two in a nonpartisan situation. I could go with that. But not in a partisan race. Now, if you want to talk about removing all party labels, let's have a conversation. But there is a way to do things better. I want you in the audience to at the during the break or after the show, do me a favor and Google instant runoff voting. Instant runoff voting. Because instant runoff voting is a nifty little system set up to reduce costs, and it specifically prevents anyone from losing without 50% of the vote. It removes the vote splitting that the major parties claim that independents and third parties create. That's gone. And it frees voters to do as they so choose. No more guilt over choosing one candidate over another. in a three-plus candidate race. It absolutely works. It's in use in America and some states, some communities. It's used by entire countries, other countries, not ours, obviously. It's a system that works. It's been proven constitutional by the courts. And I think that it would significantly increase the discourse in Kentucky and in America. And if there's anything we need right now, it's better ideas. This Senate race, prior to David Patterson getting into the race, was turning into a who loves coal the most contest. Great. But coal is not the only issue. Our infrastructure is crumbling. Kentucky has the worst education, not the worst, but one of the worst. We have the lowest wages in the nation. I saw that study. We've got a lot of problems here. And arguing over coal isn't the solution. I mean, yeah, sure, coal helps jobs and it does keep power prices low, and that's nice. Trust me, I enjoyed my power from the Eastern Kentucky power grid that unfortunately now is going up significantly in price. But that all said, there's a lot of other things that need to be talked about. You know, we almost went to war. What, 6 months ago, 9 months ago, whenever that was. We were going to be on the side of these ISIS guys, the ones that are now beheading kids, raping and killing women. Yeah, we were going to fund those guys. And John McCain and Barack Obama were both on board. The only thing that stopped that was a popular outcry. And we need that popular outcry, not just as an outcry, but also at the ballot box. And I want to encourage people, if you were thinking about sitting in any race or not voting at all, I want to encourage you not to do that. I want to encourage you to cast an empty ballot. You can do that by, you know, basically going and writing in a bad write-in ballot. Because I want to create a metric. If you really can't find anybody at all on the ballot to vote for, please vote an empty ballot. Because we need to start having some hard numbers of the people that are just angry and don't like either one. The people that want to affect change, you can't affect change by complaining on Facebook or sitting in your living room watching television. You have to act. Voting creates a metric. Once we have metrics, we have numbers, and we can show that people are upset. No more of this glossing over with the media. Oh, this candidate won with 50.1% of the vote. Well, let's ignore the fact that 70% of the people who were eligible to vote didn't even show up because they didn't like either one. We don't know that. There's no metric. Create the metric. Interesting policy ramifications here. Saw a story right before the show about cash for clunkers. Economic research now shows that program flopped miserably. No surprise to me. I don't think it was ever really supposed to do anything other than take old cars off the road. Well, what does that policy do? Well, first of all, in theory, it makes the pollution cleaner. Well, maybe. It hurts the poor, that's for sure. Because they're the ones who bought these used cars that are now in a Chinese bridge somewhere. The bridge that we don't have, they have. We sold them our steel. It's affected the used car market, for sure. That's something this study didn't even go into. I know that for a fact. As one who buys used cars, I know it affected the used car market. It artificially inflated the prices of used cars, especially the more fuel-efficient ones. Those that managed to escape the wrath of a metal shredder became phenomenally more expensive. I bought a 1991 Mazda for $1,000. Then, a few years later, immediately after Cash Flow Clunkers, that same exact Mazda in that same exact condition, when I went to buy another one, because I am a creature of habit, cost me $3,000. The price went up $2,000 for a car that got years older. Supply and demand. How's that affect a poor person's budget? Someone who doesn't have the money to spend an extra $2,000 on a car that they should have been able to pick up for $1,000 or less. Well, of course, the government runs in to save the day on that. They put trolleys in. Everybody just come live downtown and ride the trolley. Ding, ding. Not efficient. It's old technology. It's restricting our freedom to travel. It's restricting our ability to travel. It's the effect of this program. On top of the fact that it did no good, just wasted a bunch of money, and literally zero economic benefit, just flatline. None. Stupid. Just stupid. On the good front, Colorado, a new thing out showing that teen marijuana use is actually down in the wake of decriminalization, showing that prohibition actually was perhaps, not, again, this is correlation, not causation, and I will grant you that, and I want to make sure that that's clear, that this is corollary, not causal. But the doom and gloomer said, oh my gosh, you legalize marijuana and you'll have just an explosion of teenage use of marijuana. It hasn't happened. It's gone down. I know if marijuana were legalized here, I don't really have an urge to go do that. I don't care if people do, but why? And those who are most opposed to it certainly would not do it if it were legalized. It's a policy based on nanny statism, protecting the weakest among us. Well, what if, define weak, what if somebody just wants to, you know, relax and chill? I know some people that do use marijuana from time to time, and they don't abuse it. They use it the same way I might have a drink of bourbon from time to time. Just take the edge off after a hard day, relax, whatever. So the point is government intervention often causes more harm than good. But our same politicians, the people we've elected, continue these same policies, bullheadedly, pigheadedly, continue decades-old programs that don't work. Whether it's because politically it's popular to continue them, or politically it's dangerous to try to discontinue with them, or because you're tearing down somebody's little political fiefdom to do so, which is often the case. It's just government policies just don't work out the way people hope they do. And it entertains me that, you know, all these people are always legitimately shocked at the consequences, that the unintended consequences of these programs. It just makes me laugh out loud every time I read one. Well, we didn't see this coming. Oh my gosh. I mean, who could have seen that this turned out bad? Oh, I don't know. Somebody who's looked at every other program that's been done in the name of good that's turned out really, really bad? I don't know. Somebody who's been paying attention for a year or two and looking at the different programs put in place that go, what? I mean, look no further than the NSA and the domestic spying put in place immediately after 9/11 to, in theory, protect us from people who might already be here and planning the next major attack. Now it's being used to spy on us and collect information against us to be used for God knows what purpose. I'm over the break. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we'll bring co-host Dave on. I got a couple other little in that stories, but nothing, you know, pressing. If you'd like to call in about what we've talked about or other issues, 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. Back in a few minutes, folks. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And without further ado, we're going to go ahead and bring co-host Dave on the show. Dave, welcome.
Thank you, Ken. Hey, everybody.
So, Dave, the only thing I really didn't get to before the break, and I want to mention this real quick, there's some new stuff on Facebook, the Facebook apps that are out there that are basically stealing people's information. These apps claim to be little this and that. It's nothing major, but they're stealing your personal information, your stuff. And just be careful what you install. Don't just trust it because it says it works. Don't trust it because your friend says it works. Do a little research before you jump right into installing something that runs on your computer. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that because, you know, there's people out there that end up getting really, really nasty viruses. And me and IT, my friends and family all come running to me going, help, help. You know, don't be that person. Anyway, Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Actually, I want to kind of follow up on that. Likewise, don't be so naive as to believe all of the horror stories about different apps. When you said Facebook, I immediately thought of all of the crazies that are, you know, just going nuts over the Facebook Messenger app. They say, don't install it, because if you install it, then Facebook will have access to, you know, your messages and, you know, your private life and, you know, all of this. And it's like, yeah, well, you know what? Facebook already has that if you're communicating over Facebook.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I mean, be aware, and that is something that it's important for people to realize. There is no such thing as free, people. You know, Facebook says it's free. Well, it is free in monetary cost. But they're mining you. And by that, I mean they're looking at what you do, what you care about, whatever. And they're selling that information, that advertising information to people. You know, be very aware of what you're doing on Facebook. That's why I personally don't do really anything personal on Facebook. I don't want my private life used to market products to me or profile me in some other way.
Yeah, and I come from kind of the other end of the spectrum on that because I'm so open, I just don't care.
Well, and you can be. I just make sure you're aware, and that is important that folks are aware that, you know, Facebook, you are the product that is being sold. So as long as you're cool with that, hey, it's all good.
Yeah.
So.
And Ed, I completely agree. Just be aware of what you're doing, where you're doing it, and, you know, what's involved. You're entering into a voluntary agreement. You know, when you participate in a social network.
You know, to that point, you know, I haven't talked about this yet, but Democratic strategist Kathy Grube got a ton of hot water on Twitter this past week after Fancy Farm, where she had tweeted something about how Mitch McConnell's wife wasn't a Kentuckian, she's Asian. Now, Twitter, I've railed against Twitter for years because you cannot fit a coherent, logical thought in 140 characters. It's just not possible. Unless you're just touting bumper sticker slogans, you can't do it. I mean, it's enough room for a bumper sticker slogan. And that's the danger of playing on Twitter. Plus, of course, being the internet in general. Remember, anything you put on the internet is not private, period. There was a story that I read here, one of the new NSA leakers was talking about how the NSA guys pass around, you know, the topless and nude pictures that girlfriends are sending their boyfriends and stuff like that. They pass them around the office. Nothing on the internet is private, ever. It doesn't matter where or how you're sending it. Remember that.
Which gets right back into the comment that I initially made. Just don't be naive.
Right. So I'm lucky nobody wants to see me naked anyway. So anyway, Well, Dave, what are your thoughts? I want to get your feedback kind of on the, I don't know, let's start with Cash for Clunkers. This is something that I was really frustrated with when it started, and, you know, has kind of proven itself out to be a flop.
My thoughts on Cash for Clunkers hasn't changed from day one. I thought it was just it was bunk, you know, the whole thing. I haven't really thought about it much.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly had kind of let it lapse and had forgotten about it until the economic study came out showing that, oops, yeah, by the way, that didn't work. It's just another reminder that this stuff, you know, anytime the government tries to intervene in what are otherwise normal voluntary actions, it never turns out the way they planned it, because it's you're trying to affect millions of individual decisions. It doesn't work.
Yeah, and I don't remember what the restrictions on it were, but if I remember correctly, and maybe you can, you know, catch me up, because I just it was so unbelievably unimportant and ridiculous of a program that I just didn't care from the beginning. It was something about it. If you had a car that was manufactured before a certain date, you know, or something like that, you could turn it in X amount of dollars for it.
Yes. So basically, the car dealerships were given an incentive to sell high efficiency vehicles, and that incentive involved you trading your current quote-unquote gas guzzler, which was defined basically, roughly, as any car that got, I can't remember if it was 25 or 30 miles a gallon or less, and was over 20 years old. And what that did, basically, and it was really a shame what they did, they took perfectly good running vehicles, but part of the stimulus thing was that they had to destroy these vehicles. They had to render them inoperable. And so they had people taking relatively good condition vehicles and dumping acid down into the engine block to just lock the motor up, or you know, would otherwise, you know, destroy the motor, or just
right.
Because that was what the program said, you had to disable the vehicle. So they did, and then they all got sent off to metal shredders, and then all that metal got sold to China.
And if I remember correctly, this was an incentive for the dealers. So the incentive was, you know, the intent anyway, was for the dealers to peddle, you know, gas efficient vehicles.
Right.
But if I remember correctly, in the Cash for Clunkers program, all of the restrictions were on, and there were a few, as I recall, were on the vehicle being turned in, not the vehicle being sold.
I believe you still had to buy a high-efficiency vehicle of some sort. You couldn't, as I recall, you were not able to use the program to trade in your 87 Honda for a 2009, you know, Chevy 2500 pickup. You had to be moving in the right direction.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. That was the intent. But I don't
right.
think that was actually what happened in practice. Because and the reason I'm saying that is it was Cash for Clunkers, so that, you know, the dealers were able to get cash for their clients if they turned in these vehicles.
I seem to recall that there was a requirement that the vehicle had to get a certain gas mileage. The purchased vehicle had to, and I say that because the study that came out specifically talks about how what they saw when the program was instituted, there was a huge spike in the purchase of high-efficiency vehicles, high-efficiency at the time, low-cost and low-margin vehicles, because they're, you know, the small vehicles marketed towards a demographic, typically marketed towards a demographic that isn't as well off. You're not marketing a, you know, Mazda 3 to a multimillionaire. You know, you're marketing a Mazda 3 to a young family or a newer driver or someone who is cost conscious, on that. And I don't mean to pick on the Mazda 3. I actually like Mazdas. But the point being that the program, what it saw was a spike in the sales of small, efficient vehicles that basically, as soon as the program stopped, that all dried up. And the net effect was that basically all they did was get people to buy cars sooner than they would have otherwise. But over the long term, didn't really change their buying habits, but we did destroy a whole bunch of used cars that otherwise would have been available for resale. And so it affected the used market as well.
Right. I just looked it up. Do you want the eligibility criteria?
Yeah, let's hear it. Go for it.
All right. And full disclosure here, I'm looking this up on the super tremendously reliable source, Wikipedia, so be warned.
Hey, I read this on the Internet. It has to be true.
That's right. The vehicle must be less than 25 years old on the trade-in date. Only the purchase of a 5-year minimum lease of new vehicles qualify, purchase or lease. Or 5-year minimum lease of new year vehicles qualify. Generally, trade-in vehicles must get a weighted combined average rating of 18 or fewer miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Trade-in vehicles
right.
must be registered and insured continuously for the full year, blah, 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 blah. We were looking for the 18 or fewer miles per gallon. So, yes, that was an eligibility criteria.
Right, that's for the old car. Had to get 18. It had to be 18 or under.
Yep.
Were there any restrictions on what vehicle they could buy?
Let's see. Trade-in vehicles. When it ran, requires the scrapping of the eligible trade-in vehicle.
Yeah. That was the acid in the engine block.
Da, 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 da.
Yep.
Right. In addition to the rebate that. The new car bought under the plan must have a suggested retail price of no more than $45,000. And for passenger automobiles, the new vehicle must have a combined fuel economy value of at least 22 miles per gallon.
Right. So it made it, at the time anyway, it made it so trucks weren't eligible because they didn't have the high efficiency stuff yet on those. Yeah, so... you know, it was the idea was to spur along production, and it did, but then it just caused a slump immediately afterwards. Basically, there was a bubble.
Yeah.
It caused a bubble. You know, it didn't surprise me. That's all. I don't know. These government programs, they try to control behavior, and you can't do it. You just can't do it. There's no way to tell people, hey, go buy a car. I mean, I guess you could if you're to a Soviet style where, you know, somebody comes to your house and says, excuse me, you want a new car. But other than that, you can't control people. You can't tell people what to do.
Yeah. And when they do, and I'm not saying that it's right, but my education in psychology, tells me that there's a way, there is such a thing as behavior modification. The problem
is sure.
they never pay any attention to that. You know, so if they're actually trying to modify behavior, which is exactly what they're doing, they're going about
yes.
it all wrong.
Of course. They're
trying to complicate things, and which is always strange. You know, you keep it really simple. Like, you and I could right now brainstorm an idea that would work better than cash for clunkers.
Yeah. Probably half drunk.
For example, known only to dealers, but not to the general public, there is an incentive program where every person that comes in to purchase a vehicle and purchases a new vehicle under, with their fuel economy rate, whatever they were looking for there, at least 22 miles per gallon, or better. Fuel economy, right? Gets a $500 check. Cash.
Woo.
And the reason that that would help is if the dealers had somebody on the hook for a vehicle that had a combined fuel economy of 20 miles per gallon, they could, say, hey, we've got this other vehicle over here, that gets 25 miles per gallon. It's kind of similar to what you're looking for, and the price range is just about the same, and you get $500 cash.
Right.
That would modify some people's behavior. $500 cash. I'm looking at the same monthly payment for this or that. The difference is if I buy that, I'm walking away with $500.
Right.
Some people will do it, but they just try to complicate it, and it just goes haywire. And
well, anytime you try to control people and you do things, because these guys, anybody who tries to control human behavior always goes overboard. I mean, that's because the nature of those types of people, they want to control everything, so they always go overboard. The I guess the point is that this program doesn't – it's not surprising to me this program didn't work. It's just like – the really funny thing is if you look at the financials of it, the bank bailout didn't work either. The bank bailout, we dropped – I forget how much into the banks, $1 trillion or whatever it was. And, that was supposed to solve the derivative problem. Well, you could still track. Derivatives were still increasing at a ridiculous pace. That kind of stuff, these programs don't work. People are going to act how they're going to act. And
I'm actually going to... I take issue with that. I don't think that it's the program. I don't believe that the programs don't work. I believe that they do, and they in fact work very well. I just think that typically what we're told is the purpose that never works. The purpose for cash for clunkers, that didn't work. The purpose that we were told for the bank bailouts, that didn't work. But the bank bailouts were tremendously effective.
If you
assume that the goal was to continue to fund the Federal Reserve, the bank bailouts were tremendously effective.
True.
If you consider that the goal was, to fix the derivative problem, well, it was a gigantic failure. And that's what we were told. But I don't believe that was the intention of the bank bailouts. And kind of like the Messenger app thing I was talking about earlier, just don't be naive. typically what we're told, you got to think about it a little bit.
Yeah. Well,
there's always a reason behind everything, especially when it comes to government. There are usually reasons that we don't know, but they're not that hard to figure out.
No, and if you just follow the lobbyists, follow the money, you can figure that out pretty quick. So we got, about 6 minutes left, Dave. What are your thoughts or what's on your mind?
Well, you spent the majority of the first half of the hour there talking about the primary process.
Yes.
And I think that our primary process is totally whacked out. I think that there is a more elegant solution. Of course, it's one that, it wouldn't fly because, D's and R's wouldn't like it. But that is, I'm cool with, first of all, I'll go on record, with you, saying that the primary process is totally whacked out. I do not agree with public-funded primaries at all. What I do agree with, though, is having only one candidate per party on the ballot. What I disagree with is putting their party on the ballot. And what I mean by that, we've talked a little bit about this before, and I think I've talked about it on the show too. If you've got voter A and voter B walking into the voting booth, on voting day, and voter A is highly engaged and does her research and looks into candidates, and everything. That's all great. She's going to know who she wants to vote for when she's in that voting booth on that day. If voter B is not so highly engaged, and that unfortunately is the majority of the electorate, she's not going to know. But what she does in many cases is she votes for a party instead of for a candidate.
Right.
But if she were in that voting booth and she couldn't tell who, you know, which candidate was which party on the ballot, you know, she may, in the heat of the moment there, you know, go back to something that she did hear from some candidate, and she might leave, a couple of races blank because she doesn't know enough about any of them. You know, so she can't vote for anyone, and she doesn't know who to vote against, and she doesn't know what parties they are, so she doesn't know, this or that. I think that's a far more elegant solution that would fix a lot. And, of course, in regards to the primaries, that would automatically fix the primaries. We wouldn't be able to have, public-funded primaries anymore, because you would only be able to have one candidate, on the ballot, and it would be equal across the board. In a county race, your county Republican Party, your county Democrat Party, they would have to come together themselves before voting day to tell the Secretary of State who's supposed to be on the ballot.
Yeah.
And then they have to take care of it themselves, just like everybody else does. And what's wrong with that?
Nothing is wrong with that. It absolutely... I don't really necessarily care how the parties choose their candidates. I just don't want to pay for it. And I say that even as one that, involved in a party. I don't want to have to be the one that goes and asks for public funding either. That's not my goal. I don't want a publicly funded primary. I want to be in a situation where each party figures its own stuff out. And then, yeah, they can present a candidate from their party. Even without the label on the ballot, certainly, you might end up with a few more independents, but it's still a name recognition game, right? I mean, you're still going to have political signs that say vote for such and such, right? Endorsed by Republican Party, endorsed by the Democratic Party, endorsed by the Libertarian Party, endorsed by whoever, right? They're still going to get the endorsement of their party, and so they can still run with that label. It just won't be available when they walk into the booth.
Right.
So,
The only thing that I could see seriously wrong, in full disclosure, the serious problem with my idea is you do have the possibility of having, say, 572 independent candidates, for some particular race. So it needs some care and feeding, with the idea there, and I'm not sure what the restriction there would be.
That's a real easy one, Dave. I can tell you right now. The easy thing is filing fees. They already exist anyway. Filing fees, if done properly, would be used to actually fund the actual general election anyhow. And that way, that election, $7 million, isn't coming out of the taxpayers' pockets. It's coming out of the pockets of the candidates. And that, I think, is very doable. It's done in other states. Actually, Kentucky apparently has some of the lowest filing fees in the nation. So, I think that you can absolutely keep frivolous candidates off the ballot, because if you charge $1,000 to run, I don't know about you, but I don't have $1,000 burning a hole in my pocket just for fun. That'll keep the field narrowed to those that are at least quasi-serious about running.
Oh, and this is the people are on the side of reason here.
Yeah.
Let me quick share my experience going out. Doing petitioning myself. So when I was out petitioning, and I've told you, but our listeners don't know, I first started with, those people. I went door to door. I did not, just blanket anybody. So I was specifically targeting people that I thought might be, a little more apt to, sign. So I wasn't going for registered Republicans and Democrats at first. But it got so tedious that I thought, I'm just going to go ahead and do it anyway. What's the worst that can happen? I just get a bunch of doors, shut in my face. And that was not my experience. More than half of the people that I got to sign were registered Republicans or registered Democrats. And they were signing a petition for someone who was neither a Republican nor a Democrat. And the comment that I got from almost every single one of them was, I don't think that there should be something in the way of somebody that wants to run for office. I'll sign.
Yeah. It's an interesting comment, and I just realized we're already over, Dave. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think general people have affiliations, they have defaults, but they can be swayed, and I think it's a matter of getting better candidates out there. You know, there's other issues, media, et cetera, but we'll have to get into that in another show because we're way over time. So, Dave, I thank you for calling in. Folks, thanks for listening. This has been another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network. And until next week, be sure to tune in to the other shows on the network. Monday through Thursday, we're here as well from 7 p.m. or at 7 p.m. We've got Ed Springsteen and Dale the Truth bringing you information and news from around the state for the rest of the week. And until next week, have a good one.